Sir, I'm scanning something. I'm not sure what. It's coming supersonic.
Then what is it? Tell me what.
It looks like a helicopter, sir. Oh, hang on. No, it's gone supersonic again.
No helicopter could do that. You're kidding yourself.
I'm the leader, Molly. Wow, I'm the leader.
G'day, I'm on. Hey, gal. Adam O'Brien here from the Lethal Mullet Podcast, live on the Lethal Mullet Network. Well, I hope you have had a fantastic week and ready to look into some amazing TV shows and more 80s mayhem and nonsense here, of course. We look at all the stuff from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s when it comes to action movies and amazing TV shows. And boy, do we have one for you tonight. One that is quite beloved, a little bit harder to find in even streaming formats right now, as well as in DVD and Blu-ray. That is, of course, the one, the only, Airwolf, the amazing show with Jan Michael Vincent, Ernest Borgnine, and Alex Cord. This is a great series with about a little helicopter, folks, that we all loved. And it was part jet, part helicopter, part gunship, part amazing, amazing science fiction-like also in some ways. Vehicle that would be used by the heroes to go and do these amazing adventure shows, whether it's a rescue mission, military mission, some espionage, you name it. It was, of course, Stringfellow Hawk and Santini, and of course working for the firm, and we'll go into a little bit of that tonight. We are really looking at a show that I think, you know, thanks to Blue Thunder, the movie with Roy Scheider that came out in the early 80s, really sort of set a path for that kind of mechanized hero, if you like, you know, using a vehicle, you know, not unlike, I suppose, Magnum had his Ferrari and the A-Team had their RV van slash whatever you want to call it. They all had this amazing vehicle that got them where they needed to go, and that was a big part of what it was. Of course, we've got Stringfellow Hawk and his mission to find his long-lost brother, the POW Sinjin. We'll go into a little bit of that tonight. Predominantly, what we're going to be looking at tonight is the movie. Now, this was one that was put out as a VHS, I remember back in the day. I actually remember hiring it out a number of times. And also back in the day, you know, this was one that was attached to all the VHSs where you got the series as well. I have only in the last week found it on Blu-ray. It was a UK issue, actually, this one. And I also found the DVD set too. So I'm actually going through it, and we'll probably do a follow-up episode to this as I go through the series, because it has been since about 1987 since I've seen the series. I only saw the first three seasons, and not the one where Sinjin takes over from Stringfellow, which is, of course, Barry Van Dyke, folks. That's right, Dick Van Dyke's son, the one that took over from Starbuck in Battlestar Galactica, and that is, well, not even called that. It was called Galactica 1980, the follow-on. So, again, we'll probably look at that soon too, folks. And if you're into westerns, we will be going to more westerns very, very soon. We're going to be looking at the Billy the Kid, which is Gore Vidal's take on the story of Billy the Kid. It'd been done once before with, it was Paul Newman. So it wasn't done exactly the way that they wanted to do it. And the updated version was done in about 1987 or 88, I can't remember. But it was with Val Kilmer in the role. Rene Auberjonois is in it as well. And Duncan Rieger as well. It's pretty good. It's pretty accurate to the story. And again, very hard to find on DVD, folks. I had to get this one on VHS. And again, it was a beloved VHS back in the day. So we'll be looking at that very, 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 very soon. I know that the boys are very interested over at FPN and doing Silverado and also Tombstone. So we'll definitely look at doing Tombstone. Again, very, very beloved film. Mainly due to the amazing performances in it. You compare that to some of the other ones, like I suppose the one that was the clincher, the one that was very, very close to being made at the same time. I think actually the schedule is very close. That is, of course, on the side of it, the one, the only, Wide Earp with Kevin Costner, and of course done by the director of Silverado, of course the amazing director, who Lawrence Kasdan, who obviously is heavily involved in the Star Wars world as well as a writer and much more. So that's what we're going to get into in the next couple of weeks, folks. So lots of Western stuff, a little bit of a deep dive into some classic Westerns and ones that are definitely fun. I think that you're going to get a lot more out of. We may even be looking at soon Lonesome Dove. And one of the things I've been doing with that is revisiting not only the miniseries and the prequel series, Comanche Moon, which is very good, folks. If you haven't seen it, see it, check it out. And of course, Streets of Laredo, which is about the older Woodrow F. Call, James Garner taking over from Tommy Lee Jones. Tommy Lee Jones is a cowboy there, folks. Did you know that? Cowboy. Yes. Tommy Lee Jones. Yes. Oh, Tommy Lee. Very serious man, but a very, very good actor. And of course, you will be looking at the books and how they differ and vice versa. They're really good, folks. I mean, I'm not a huge reader of Westerns, per se, but these are definitely some of the best, especially when it comes down to character. Again, the West is more a setting to some of the great... The stories are just characters going through a different time period, one that you have not witnessed yourselves, and one that is just, again, rougher, more tumble than we are out here and in our current future. Yeah. All right, folks, here's how you can catch us here at the one, the only, the podcast.
Has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, my name is Gowan. Follow the Lethal Mullet here on Fandom Podcast Network's master channel at fpnet.podbean.com or subscribe on the Podbean app where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. New look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. You can also check out The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Lethal Mullet. You can also check out this show and all the others like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. Make sure you follow me, the Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Now it's time for the latest action news from the cinema and martial arts movies and more, all here on the Lethal Mullet podcast. All right, not a lot of news this week. We've gone through some of the last couple episodes, which were very, very new news out there. But I will go through a few things that I found online, and this is to do with the new Snyder Cut of Justice League, which is going to be coming out next week, March 18th, and Australia's finally got, well, you're going to be able to find it, and that is, of course, on Binge, which is a new streaming platform, I think, run by Foxtel here in Australia. Now, Foxtel have always had the rights to HBO material, so it's been harder to find that series of TV shows and everything else you can find on HBO out here because of that. So on Binge, you will find it, and you'll find it alongside... Foxtel as well, I think, on Foxtel channel itself out here. I haven't had Foxtel for many years, so I couldn't tell you how much that's going to be to get. But with a Binge, you can get it for 2 weeks for free before you... So 2 week trial. So why not give Binge a shot? I'm certainly going to do it and watch this 4 hour cut of Justice League, which Snyder's put together. And the amount of hours and time and effort this gentleman has put into his, obviously, cut here is going to be something very, very interesting. You know, I've been one of those vocal people that didn't really care for where Snyder was going with a lot of the material, and it's taken a few years, I suppose, after watching, not so much Man of Steel, I really enjoyed Man of Steel, but, you know, BVS, along with, I suppose, Suicide Squad, and then watching, of course, Aquaman and Wonder Woman, and you get a real sense of what he was trying to accomplish. And it's something different, but a lot deeper than I was sort of thinking he would go. And I'm very keen to see where that was going to go, particularly that Justice League was going to be split into a couple of films. I think he had 5 films in total he was looking at. So it's interesting, particularly where he was going with Superman, with, of course, Cyborg and The Flash, Wonder Woman, and the lore as well, obviously bringing Darkseid into it and Steppenwolf. In particular, the CGI that he's using is far, far better than we got from Mr. Whedon. Again, I think they did what they wanted to do. They wanted to inject quite a bit of comedy into that version. So the one that we saw Whedon put out back in 2017. And, you know, it's not as cohesive. There's no way that's cohesive with the other ones as much. Even though there's some fun parts, but of course we have the moustache issue, which was, something that obviously Henry Cavill had to keep when he was doing the Mission Impossible film as well. So there's all these little factors, which is going to be good to see this film finally, first of all, have justice done to it. So justice done to Justice League when it comes to the story that Snyder was trying to do, to see it as it was intended and see all of the characters get their chance to shine. And I think the biggest one is going to be Steppenwolf, which was pretty laughable, to be perfectly honest. And it's a shame because when I saw that version, I mean, you could tell Kieran Hines is putting a real big effort to get that character out there with the voice and all that sort of stuff. But then you got Darkseid. Is just doing, this obviously domination of the world and sort of trying to, I suppose, take it over for the second time. And it's great to see that, I suppose, that little prelude that we see when they're talking about obviously the boxers and obviously the original heroes taking on, which is, of course, Zeus and Apollo and even an earlier edition of course, the Amazonians and, of course, the one, the only. Well, folks, you know, the Green Lanterns, that's right. The Green Lantern Corps are in that as well. So it's great to have that sort of mythology that, you know, that was the superheroes of that day. And this is the superheroes of this day too. So look, I'm keen. It's very much in that, deep part of the comic book world, you know. And I'm keen to see also what they're going to do with the Flash film and obviously the sort of opening up the different multiverses that we're going to see, obviously. The Tim Burton era of Batman come through with Michael Keaton, and it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's kind of like what they're going to be doing with Spider-Man over with Marvel and bringing back Doc Ock, and perhaps, well, again, it's been said here and there that Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield may be in the film, but I think it's even that the current Spider-Man mentioned that it wasn't going to happen. So who knows? Maybe they're just going to be tight-lipped about cameos in that one too. But I'd like to see DC, in particular the Snyderverse, wrapped up nicely with this one. But hearing this possible cliffhanger in this one too. So will we see another film? Very unlikely. In his vision, I don't think it's going to happen. But because I hear they're taking a new version of Superman soon too. So there won't be the Henry Cavill Superman anymore after this. So. Again, it's going to be interesting, but I wanted to see what Snyder had in mind, and what better place to do it than kicking back in your own lounge room and watching 4 hours of the Snyderverse. Alrighty, mate. Time to go down to the pub for a pint, a chat, action movies and more, here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Alright, folks, let's chat about it. The action military drama television series, as Wikipedia likes to say. Let's just say it was a cool series. Let's just put it that. Yeah, there's elements of action, military, drama. This is a real fun piece of television history. It is military, though. There's no getting around that. There's a lot of that in this. And, of course, the gunship itself is a prototype, one that is very, very cool. And, of course, it echoes gunships of the past, ones that were used in Vietnam, and of course even echoes a TV show and a movie called Blue Thunder in some ways as well. The show started in 1984 and ran through till 1987. Hot in the times, obviously, of Magnum and shows like Knight Rider and others that used vehicles as kind of a way to get in and around the action. It was set around it. They had a lot of espionage, and obviously there was a Cold War theme to it as well, with a lot of the times, the Russian military were the villains in a lot of the episodes too. Some went to Vietnam, obviously, because we had the storyline of Stringfellow's brother being followed up as well. But across the board, it was definitely rooted in the Cold War of, you know, through the 1950s through to the 80s. This show was created by Donald P. Belisario, and the show itself had the most amazing theme music. Now, when you think of 80s themes, well, Sylvester LeVay did an amazing score that has slap bass, it has a classic theme to it over the top of it, and this amazing synth score with it as well. It's just beautifully played. It's brilliant. They ran for a total of four seasons between 84 and 87, and we've got a total of 79 episodes, I guess, including the pilot itself. Usually, most of those episodes ran about 45 minutes, and of course, 60 minutes of television with all of the ads they used to put in there too. It was brought through Universal and MCA as well. So out here in Australia, it was on regularly. It was on usually on a Saturday night when it first came out, and we saw it, I think, wasn't the first season that was airing. It was about the second season of the show that was airing, now that I've seen a little bit more of it, and I remember it. And again, the concept itself of the show was coming out from the idea of the creators of Magnum to have the show centered around a helicopter, as we sort of had similar with obviously the Hawaiian Islands, and obviously Magnum, played by Tom Selleck, you know, and his mode of choice was using, of course, the fire engine red Ferrari that he had. And there was helicopters involved in that too. So the first three seasons had Jan Michael Vincent, Ernest Borgnine, Alex Court, and Gene Bruce Scott as the regulars. And then obviously the fourth one came along and sort of truncated a lot of what you saw in the past, and that came together, and they sort of, a little bit like Galactica 1980, and even took a star from it to continue it. And obviously, with a smaller budget, they were just literally pinching shots from the original seasons to get a lot of the action together. So let's get a little bit more on about the actual helicopter itself. So it's called, simply, Airwolf. It is a supersonic helicopter with stealth capabilities, an amazing arsenal, and it's based on the Bell 222. So it's an actual helicopter that it was based off. Now, it was designed by Charles Henry Moffett, played by David Hemmings. And basically, it's this prototype huge weapon system that can go behind enemy lines, destroy things before you even knew it was there, and get out there using its turbos, which I think they took that sort of idea from, obviously, Battlestar Galactica and other things too. And again, it's got rockets, it's got gun pods, 30mm cannons. It's got a lot of the things you would find on a gunship. So it's a pretty formidable weapon. And of course, the designer is showing this off in the first episode to Alex Cord's character, which is codenamed Archangel. And that is, of course, the firm's deputy director, Michael Coldsmith Briggs III. Now, this is played by Alex Cord, and he's basically coming to see this new weapon system in the first episode. And this is, of course, Airwolf the movie, folks. But as they see it, they see there's a government member there to see exactly what this weapon system is. And he just thinks it's another one of these deals that's probably not that exciting, and obviously tables turn because Moffat turns the Airwolf on those that had wronged him in the past, and obviously he lays waste to the firm that's set up the observation post with Airwolf. So we get to see a really big action scene at the start where he literally uses almost every weapon and all the gun pods to destroy everybody in there. The only people that get out there alive are Archangel and his offsider, so they're able to get through and save themselves. And then Airwolf is lost. So the plot of this first episode is literally Archangel, a few months later, trying to actually get Airwolf back. Airwolf is taken all the way to the other side of the world, where it's used by warlords to basically take out competition and stuff like that too. And it's taken to Muammar Gaddafi, who allows Moffat to keep Airwolf in Libya. And obviously he's sort of told to do things for Gaddafi to keep his place there. And this is where we start to meet some of the other cast. Archangel himself then goes to meet Stringfellow Hawk, who's actually a test pilot for the aircraft itself. So he knew it, knew how to use it, all that sort of stuff. And he's working currently as a pilot, used on movie sets and stuff like that for helicopters, planes and things like that. Working for Santini Air, Dominic Santini, played by Ernest Borgnine, yes, Mikhail from Mikhail's Navy. And he's brilliant at this. The two of them feed off each other lines. You can tell they've been pals for years. But Stringfellow Hawk's a weird individual. He's very solemn, very quiet, very stoic. The first episode we see him in is out in his log cabin. He's chilling out with a big cello and just playing along on that, chilling. And there's a lot of that in the first few episodes. You get to see him playing that a lot. So it's obviously a theme. What he's trying to do is there's a hawk flying in and around the lake near his cabin, and he's trying to make it feel calm enough that it'd come down and just chill out literally right next to him. Obviously, there's a bit of a back catalogue of things that's happened between him and Archangel. They don't trust each other, but they obviously know each other. And Stringfellow is tempted by Archangel to go and find Airwolf and bring it back. But will he keep Airwolf for himself, maybe, and use it for their own ends? Who knows? And that's pretty much what we see in this episode. It's a great pilot for what it is, and obviously to the amazing work they've done on the Bell 2-2, which we're going to go into just some of the things that they did to this aircraft. And it's got a bit of a history too, folks, because the history of the aircraft itself is also what happened after the TV show. All right, it got turned back into its former self, and was used as a rescue aircraft as well. So very, very interesting. Now, what's great is we get to see Hawk on the set of a police show where the star has been taking some flying lessons in helicopters and thinks he can do the tricks that he's meant to do. And of course, Hawk doesn't feel anything. He's like, whatever. And of course, straight away, what he ends up doing is going through and basically sitting in the co-pilot's chair in this little Bell helicopter as the pilot, the actor, is trying to keep this thing from going one side to the other, going on its ass, and he has no chance because he doesn't have the skill level. And of course, at the end of it, we see Stringfellow bring it back into play as well. This is a great one. Obviously, they do get Airwolf, they do bring it back, and it's interesting to see it go up against, aircraft like jets and other things. And obviously we get to see some of the great things too. Now, they talk about Airwolf is the fact that it is a character in this as well. And it's kind of like the Batmobile. It's got that sort of iconic look. And it's also one that to this day, you cannot find a model itself of the actual helicopter itself on eBay for under about $400 Australian. If you can find it for that, it's probably not worth it. All right, now it's time to chat about the actual helicopter itself, which obviously is one of the coolest things out there. Now, this was a Bell 222 with a serial number of 47085. And it's an amazing chopper just by itself. Now, this is a Bell which is used for many different uses. Obviously, some of it is going to be for commercial use. The design itself is quite different when it came to seeing this around the place. It has the actual landing legs that you see on a lot of other of those type of Bell helicopter that are used by whether it's a news chopper, rescue, land, sea, and air rescue out here in Australia uses similar choppers as well from the Bell company as well. And it was designed around 1976. So it's a utility helicopter and an executive one as well. Now, there's quite a few different things they did to this helicopter to make it into Airwolf, obviously, too. So it's quite heavily modified. And we'll go into that here. So it was owned by Jetcopters Incorporated, which operated out of Van Nuys in California. And after the show itself, it was turned into an ambulance and used out in Europe and Germany. And the actual helicopter itself was destroyed in 1992 in a storm. It killed, unfortunately, the three occupants of the craft itself. So again, there's not only is it the design they've done this, so it doesn't have the landing legs that this set. It has proper landing gears and stuff like that, obviously the wheels. And it's a very sleek design. It has this sort of underbelly of this gun grey and mixed with that really deep, not khaki, but it's very deep, dark green. That sort of dark green that you see on a lot of the old jet fighters and stuff like that too. And this is a civilian craft. It's not used by the military. So this was designed as a commercial craft more than it was anything else. But what's amazing about the vehicle itself is that, you know, it was outfitted to be this gunship that could go supersonic. And had an amazing ceiling that it would be able to. You see it in one of the later episodes in season one, where Stringfellow actually takes it almost to the breaking of the stratosphere itself. You almost see this space, so it's unbelievable. So obviously, in the actual universe itself, it is owned by the firm, and obviously it is basically a disguised craft, if you like. It's one that, you know, again, could be, in all intents and purposes, one that was used by, a straight-up, company or whatever it is. In this case, it's really, really amazing. So the actual craft itself's got turbojet engines and intakes on it. Also has in-air refueling nozzle. It has a retractable rocket launcher. And with that too, you see that a lot in each episode. It's basically the same film clip rerun where they have the pod come in and out and ready for action each time. It also has the retractable gun pods on the sides, probably 30mm cannons, I guess. Those are machine guns based in the wooden tips itself too. And they're used in, obviously, the first episode where we see, obviously, the destruction of the firm's base. And it's pretty much able to target all parts with that too as well. And everything's retractable. So if this was out there, you know, and you saw it, at first you'd probably think it's just a civilian aircraft. But when you see it fully manned out with all of its weaponry, obviously this is one that's, you know, it's absolutely devastating. So basically the way it was designed, the machine guns mounted on the side were mock-ups and used basically spark plugs and fuel to simulate gun firing. So they weren't real. Like any vessel they're used in film and TV, obviously they're not going to be real stuff. A lot of sound effects used on it too. And obviously it's designed to be like a wolf, you know, and blend in and, basically hide. Are described by the makers as a wolf in sheep's clothing on the actual, side too. So obviously the vehicle is meant to be a real predator in the sky, you know, obviously one that can creep up and really take on. And it's interesting. They call it the lady in this series, Stringfellow Hawk and Santini. When they find, obviously, a place to put her out in the desert, in the wilds, and only they know the place that to find it, except every co-star seems to be able to find it too, which is part of the fun of the show, I suppose. They get characters finding it too. So obviously it's pretty heavily armored as well, so it takes quite a few beatings and is able to stay in the sky for a little bit longer. It gets up to Mach 0.5, which is half the speed of sound, and obviously too the rotating of the motors itself, able to get it up to a certain point where also the jets can kick in and it goes supersonic. So it's interesting. It gives it lift. It gives it everything. It's likened in the show to a jet itself, which I think is really, really interesting too. So the Billy itself has air-to-air missiles, Hellfires, Heat Seeker. There you go. That's a mouthful, folks. Heat-seeking air-to-air Sidewinders as well. And again, a lot of what we see in there is like watching it from a science fiction show like Star Wars or Stargate, Star Trek, that sort of thing too. So we get to see a lot of that built in that too. And again, it's interesting, it's powerful, and that's what I think was really, really interesting about it too. All right, so let's have a look at the bit of the cast. So season one, which is we're looking at right now. Stringfellow Hawk, US Army captain, obviously 34 years of age in the fifth episode. So there we know the game park or the ballpark of how old he is, and obviously he's a Vietnam veteran very good friends with Dominic Santini. So Dominic Santini, played by the veteran actor Ernest Borgnine, lovingly played, because it really, really works. He's the heart and soul of the show. Obviously, he's kind of a father figure to Jan Michael Vincent, but also a best pal as well. Then we have Alex Cord playing Michael Coldsmith Briggs III, Deputy Director of the CIA division, named, of course, The Firm. And, of course, we know him only as Archangel, pretty much. And, of course, Archangel knows Dominic and, obviously, Stringfellow really well. And, obviously, there's a bit of history before we get to them taking up Airwolf as well, which is played out, which we'll talk about maybe in a follow-up to this. We'll talk about the first season, second season, maybe in a couple episodes' time when I've watched those. It's been a while since I've watched it. Then we got Deborah Pratt playing Mirella, and she's Archangel's right-hand woman. Now, she's also the one that's really got all the info when it comes to not just Airwolf, but all the missions and stuff like that. She's able to sort of get a lot of the exposition out, but she also really puts Stringfellow in his place, and really sort of says at the end of the day, look, you know you have to help us, and always has the reason why. So we've got that. We've also got recurring characters, obviously, too, like Barry Van Dyke, which turns up in season four. He plays St. John Hawk, or St. John, as it said. But basically, St. John Hawk, who's the brother, lost in Vietnam, Reserve Major U.S. Army. We also have in the characters of Vincent Borgnine, Cord Pratt, all coming back for seasons 2 to 3, with also Jean Bruce Scott, who plays Caitlin O'Shaughnessy, who's the former helicopter pilot of the Texas Highway Patrol, involved in this too. Season 4 moves on to, obviously, Barry Van Dyke being the lead, Michelle Scarabelli playing Joe Santini, who inherits it from her uncle, Dom. Geraint Wynne Davies plays Mike Rivers, the Major of the US Air Force. Anthony Sherwood plays Jason Locke, the new, basically, company director, if you like, looking after everything. And then we have William B. Davis playing Newman, Locke's supervisor in the company as well. And he's in the first episode of Season 4, Blackjack. So it would be interesting in a couple of months' time, once I've watched the entire series, to do a Season 4 follow-up and chat about what I thought about that too, and how it goes through. So a little bit of let you know about some of the merch that's out there. In the original series, two books were published. I actually have those somewhere in storage, and they were fun for what they were. But there's also a graphic novel published in 2015 called Airwolf's Airstrikes, which recasts Archangel as a woman and Dominic Santini's son, who is also in it as well. And what's interesting is we get, obviously, the legacy of Airwolf, but I think what's interesting about it is it's a very visual show, you know. It's an amazing action-packed show, but it's always so visual. So I think graphic novel format was really, really interesting to carry that on too. Obviously, too, merchandise, there's obviously the replica helmet, which you can get. Models of the actual helicopter itself too, which, you go on eBay, you're going to see a lot. You can see the old ERTL models, which came out, and you had these. They're very, very small. It's about the size of a matchbox car. Actually, recently was on eBay and trying to get one that was a pack of the Jeep from Santini Air, the helicopter, the Bell, and also Airwolf. And it started at about $20, folks, and it got a little bit higher than I was willing to pay. But you can see that it's so collectible, it was getting into the hundreds. And of course, the big ones, the bigger, huge models that you can get, are quite large. Like, they're at least a foot long, some of them. Some of them are RC, remote control as well, from what I've seen as well. You can actually see one on YouTube. You look up YouTube Airwolf remote control. There's some that are out there as well. And for those that lived in Brisbane area, Queensland, you'll find that there's a place called Underwood Park where we've seen some of these choppers flying up there, a model aircraft and drone yard where you can actually go up and use this massive paddock to fly your aircraft. And there's even a little landing strip that was there back at the time. I think it was a former cricket pitch. So you can go and check that out too. So obviously, too, a series of tie-in novels that by Star Publishing. And again, there was a comics as well at the time. Big one was the video games back in the day, the Commodore 64 and 16, and as well as the Amstrad. We also had Atari 8-bit game as well that came out too. There was an arcade game. The NES is the one I remember. Obviously, too, there was Super Airwolf, which came out on Mega Drive as well. We're talking about a time where we had Desert Strike and Jungle Strike. The other games kind of pretty much took the idea of Airwolf and Blue Thunder and put it in the areas of conflict that were out there, whether it be desert or jungle, vice versa, too. So the first episode is fantastic. If you can find the Blu-ray version of the pilot, get it. It's awesome. Again, gives you all the backstory you need and gives you as much Airwolf action as you're going to get out there. It's a 5 out of 5, folks, on the Hallenbeck scale. And where do you find Airwolf? Well, folks, overseas, it looks like it's airing on GetTV as of a couple of years ago now, probably about 3 years ago now. You can also find it on Peacock, which is a streaming service of Universal and NBC. Folks, we don't get it here in Australia, so if you're going to want to find it and you're down under, down here, the only place is to get onto Amazon and get the DVDs, folks. Get the box set. The only way you're going to find it. All right, folks, that's it for Lethal Mullet this week. And I hope you go and enjoy some Airwolf. Go and check it out. I love it, folks. There's nothing better than that show for a bit of rock and roll and good fun, gunships and all the craziness, all the espionage, all the action. All of Stringfellow, Hawk, and of course Dominic Santini, and of course Archangel and Friends. It's awesome. Go and check it out. We'll catch you next time. Same place, same channel, same mullet. All here on the Lethal Mullet Network. Catch you next time.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. Endzone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast, looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.